Thank you, number 7, community hall.
And it didn't work. Making it clear. Are you ready? I would like to call the Village of Round Lake Committee of the Whole meeting to order for October 7, 2013 at 7:36. May I have a clerk roll call?
Trustee Clemens?
Present.
Trustee Fry?
Present.
Trustee Newby? Trustee Simoncelli?
Present.
Trustee Tripon?
Present.
Trustee Wisniewski?
Present.
Item 2.1, approve the minutes of the Committee of the Whole meeting of September 16, 2013. May I get a motion? Sure, let's do that. Thank you for the omnibus motion. Is by Trustee Fry, seconded by Trustee Tripon. It's items 2.1, 2.2, and 2.3. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Public comment. We'll continue. You know what? I'm going to hold off. I believe I know why you're here, and there's a discussion in the next section, so I'm going to allow public comment at that time. And as a matter of fact, we're going to go to the committee as a whole and move you to the top, so you'll be the next to speak, because we have a lot of business to do underneath it, and there'll be a presentation, and the lights are going to go off, and everybody will go to sleep, and I won't bore you with all of that. So I'm going to move down under building and zoning, the topic carried over from the last meeting, chickens as pets. And I will allow public comment at this time. Yes, you may. Just please state your name and your address.
My name is Emily Bagwell. I live at 1839 West Green Lake Court in Round Lake. I printed out a couple of things. Can I give them to you or no?
Absolutely.
Would that be okay? I really appreciate your time. I think I printed out enough.
Oh, that'd be great. There's two pages each. Let's keep one.
Okay, so I'll speak very briefly. I'd like to thank you for letting me speak to you. My husband and I live in the southeast corner of Valley Lake subdivision. We're on a third of an acre in a fully fenced yard. And we are interested in obtaining some hens as backyard animals. The reason we would like to get them, we've got two young children. Honestly, a lot of my relatives grew up on farms. I've often noticed they have a very different perspective on animals and just the circle of life, I guess, in general. I think chickens provide a good animal that is good for teaching children responsibility, for having chores. You have to go out and take care of them. Hot, cold, dark, light. We're interested in them just because we think they're interesting animals. But primarily we would like to give our children that experience of having some animals that they can take care of. Cats, dogs aren't an option for us due to allergies. So I did print out a couple of examples of Illinois chicken ordinances that I thought there were a couple of very interesting things. I just printed out Naperville, Chicago, and Evanston because they're all, you know, pretty built up communities like we are. I thought it was very interesting that Naperville does have regulations saying that folks have to sweep and clean their coops once every 24 hours to keep it clean. I also thought it was very interesting that Evanston has some requirements for a permit, and also you have to register with the Illinois Department of Agriculture. I did note in the paper recently Lake County is currently considering reducing the acreage required for chickens from 5 acres to a quarter of an acre, and also Libertyville is also in process considering whether they would allow chickens on smaller lots. So on the back page, I did put a picture of a coop that I found on the internet that I thought was very attractive, just as an example of something people might get that's really not an eye for. for their backyard. That's a picture of my older daughter. We did go over to that Prairie Crossing Learning Farm, where we volunteered. They've got a little chicken operation over there. So we go over a couple times a month and collect the eggs and wash them and stuff. So I know Anastasia and some other folks have a lot more data, but I just wanted to thank you for considering them. Do you have any questions for me here?
Thank you.
Thanks for considering.
Thank you, Emily. I have got a little bit more information. This is the list of the major cities in the United States.
Emily, pardon me, Anastasia, would you please state your name just for the record and address?
Anastasia Flash Train, Greenleaf Drive, 1918. It's off of the bus. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I got a list of some cities in the United States that allow chickens. So New York is one of them. In the state of New York, Washington D.C. allows chickens. This, you know, kind of cities. So you can take a look. Chicago, of course, and Allentown, and Riverdale, working at Long Grove, working on it. So hopefully we'll see changes. I also agree with what Emily has just said, and she can make a very desirable pet, which I think is keeping our a lot of standards thinking. They are smaller, they are easier to manage, they don't have to be walked around, they're not as aggressive. There are sorts of chickens, like for example, chickens can be dirty. Well, in this case, there are good pet owners and bad pet owners. First of all, you have to have your chicken enclosed in a coop, and it has to be in your backyard, not anywhere not, you know, close to the road. And obviously, there are certain rules that, first of all, you clean up their pen in that coop, and obviously, maybe to prevent any type of salmonella, which is a food pen dirty disease, basically. You have to make sure there is a hand sanitizer right outside of the pool. And once the children are done cleaning the chicken, you come into the house and you make sure you all wash your hands with soap, which is not something we don't know. You just have to make sure it's practice all the good thing. Obviously, we're really concerned about the vermin and attracting coyotes. First of all, coyotes have been out there just like the raccoons, just like possums, just like rabbits, and all the other animals. It's not like we came into the empty space and we decided to leave, and all of a sudden all of the animals, predators, come to hunt chickens down. The other thing will probably hunt the same little dogs that they are around, or wild cats, or other animals that they can find to couple. I have seen in some of the books that you can find, they are widely available through the libraries, through the home improvement stores, magazines are there, that you can actually build up very effective fence with a 9-volt battery just around the coop, turn it on at night, and it's pretty safe. Of course, if you have a permanent fence, that would be another way of protecting your chickens. You're not going to leave them out. The vermin and the rats and things like that. I'm not going to be quiet about a lot of people feeding wild birds, and there is nothing wrong with feeding wild birds. People like to do that because they feel they support the nature around them. So some of my neighbors might have up to 5-6 bird feeders, and they spend $200 per year on feeding the birds. Fine. You can regulate them. They like doing that. Why can't feed the chickens and keep the feed in a metal can with a lid that is secure from the corn? Just like, you know, people roll out their garbage at night and put it into the garbage and keep them there. So it's just about how well you can think about such things as a pet owner and the home of your property. Did I use any? The vermin question, and did I address this issue? Because I know that we have that.
I think the point that she's trying to make, though, is that we currently already have rats, chipmunks, and things like that in the neighborhoods anyway. And we have neighbors who have the bird feeders, that seed is spread around the bird feeding area. And so the point that Lisa's trying to make is there's really not much of a difference between a chicken coop that was happening in a chicken feed and in a bird feeder in a neighbor's yard that had that bird feed that's spilling on the ground. It's going to attract the same kind of vermin or same kind of pests, so to speak. So there's really, they're birds. They're just all birds, whether it's a chicken or a wild bird that somebody's attracting to their yard because of the bird feeders. And I'm sorry, my name is Kevin Stein. I'm Anastasia's husband, also now my mother, green leaf bag. And then the biggest speaker of the world.
He speaks no matter what. You can't stop. Say it. Once you have something in the mind, he'll let you know. How do we differentiate the farm animals? That was one of the questions that I heard last time when we were here. How do you stop all of the other animals, the horses, the ponies, the goats, the pigs, specifically? Well, you specifically write down what you're talking about. We're talking about chickens. Actually, there is a specific Latin name for that. Gallus domesticus. And then he described that we should not have horses to prevent the noise, because I understand my neighbors, they don't want to have horses, and I agree with them. I don't want you to wake up first thing in the morning listening to the roosters. Then you can regulate the number of hens and all the other things like hoof, feed, no slaughter of any kind, and where do you want to keep the hoof, like how far away from the property.
I think she's created kind of a draft type code, looking at some of the city codes that do approve chicken systems. So she has this, and it's just kind of an example of what code could look like, using language from some that she's already seen. We were talking, I think, one of the concerns from the last time we were here was about the slippery slope. Once you say yes to one farm animal, how do you limit it to just that farm animal? And it's basically, currently, the code, the village code here does specifically mention chickens as one of the prohibited animals. And so that's how you do it. You take that animal off. I believe a month or two or some time back, there was somebody that was talking about bringing pigs or a pot-bellied pig, I think, into the village.
Yeah.
And so even the way the rule for the law is written right now in the code in the village here, there's still somebody coming forward and asking about a pig. So the slippery slope argument, even if we do say yes to chickens, it's not going to open the door any more than it already is. The pig, for example, somebody came in already and said, we'd like to bring a pig. So you just need to write the code in such a way, amend the current code that removes chicken as a prohibited animal, and then enter a new section that includes it or it says that it is possible under certain guidelines. No roosters, the coops have to be so far away from the fence line so that they're not next to a neighbor's yard. That they need to be clean, things like that.
Is there any questions that you could address? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Other ordinance stands right now. Cats are not allowed to be outside roaming. Dogs are not supposed to be off the leashes. And both are vaccinated. How would you first off with a hen, would they completely stay in their coop or would they be allowed to run around to the hen?
I think again that's how you write it into the code. You would indicate that they either need to stay permanently inside of a coop and a hen yard. I don't know what the picture looked like that Emily printed out, but a lot of the backyard chicken coops and hen yards, basically they'll have a small coop that's large enough for the number of chickens, and then there'll be a space with chicken wire around it that is the hen yard. And most of those are movable so that you can move them to different sections of the yard for cleaning purposes, and then so you don't mess up. But you write that in there. If somebody wanted to let any of their chickens out of their coop, it would only be in a situation where they would have a fully fenced yard where the chickens couldn't get out. Or, again, you say in the code that the chickens must always remain inside of a hen coop or hen yard.
And you also can talk about how many square foot the chickens supposed to have. For example, 4 square feet. On a manufacturer's corporate, you know, big companies, they have 1x1. That's all they have. Obviously, it's extremely small. But there are regulations. I am going to give you this, couple of drafts. They give an idea of what the other municipalities took into consideration for the chickens. How they should be the laws. Emily mentioned that, you know, other corporations are taking into consideration to reduce the loss size of having chickens. So basically, you can take a look at what is out there. Is it going to be 2 square feet, which is still small, which is 4 square feet, which is probably too small.
One of the other things is about hand washing and infection. Birds carry diseases that obviously they can't be vaccinated for, or our industry wouldn't have this issue. So how do you plan on enforcing and regulating any kind of diseases that would be brought about by these types of birds?
Well, you know, when I was reading this book, and this book is written by a person who has been in she said that the huge multi-million bird special flock factory farms that raise immune-compromised homogeneously bred monocrop chickens that are far, far greater threat and risk of causing a disease epidemic. On the contrary, keeping backyard flocks can help prevent the spread of the avian flu. Right. Salmonella is the result of a poor food handling practices and insufficient refrigeration. Backyard flocks are not the source nor the cause of salmonella avian flu infection. The Center of Disease Control has stated, in the United States, there is no need to remove a flock of chicken because of concerns regarding avian influenza. And the 2006 Great Report states, when it comes to the bird flu, diverse small-scale poultry farming is the solution, not the problem.
Basically, it's a very good point.
How would we enforce it? May I real quick?
Sorry. One thing, when I think about, because I actually did bring up after the damage and the thing about salmonella with the bird, just from having gone to the veterinary school and the lower and the sex levels, we did a lot about that and learning about making sure to wash your hands after handling them. With the kids, that's what my big concern. It's more so our responsibility. Obviously, practice good hand washing. Just like you teach your children to do that, you wash your hands. Also, when you go shopping, you buy chicken at the store. Do you often have them bag the chicken separately, or do you have them put it in with your other goods? Or when you store your chicken, if you go to a restaurant, chicken, poultry, always has to be on the lowest shelf. They can't put it above meat. They can't put it above anything else. It has to be on the lowest shelf because it's essential. So it's just even from the chicken that we buy at the store already containing salmonella leaking into the so I think it's really going to be more so proper handling.
And again,
I'm
still
asking,
how are we going to enforce it?
And I would say, just like with raising dogs and cats, how do we currently enforce that?
They go if they're exactly cutting these mandates like they put, like they mentioned, the automatic the hand sanitizer outside the coop. That's one way of kind of doing it. But it's got
to
be.
It's one of the goals to have a custom size and health size.
And again, I would still say to you, who and how are we going to enforce it? Are we sending our police officers? Are we sending our code enforcers? I mean, we have to look at the logistics of that as well. We already have them watching for cats and dogs that are running around and such, but...
Are they checking the breeding ticks going on with... Sorry.
I know.
Are they checking the breeding ticks of all the dogs that go running around? Cat knows my dog's already been in the news since it's been chased a couple of times. She's quite ingenious looking away. but she sees what happens, she runs to my front door.
And that's sort of my point about the rabies, is right now, you know, we have licensing requirements for dogs and cats, and they are supposed to be vaccinated. But how do we make sure that every dog, every cat, in every household in the village of Round Lake has a tag?
And usually when a problem comes up, that it's then determined whether they did or didn't to the end. So
right,
I still have to say, we have an enforcement issue already. It's just cats and dogs. And I'm not saying that I'm against, you know, the chickens. I'm simply saying we have to cover all the bases and be sure we've answered all the questions. Because in the end, this is going to be an arbitrary decision of the board to decide to include or disclude chickens. Now, chickens are still a farm animal. Again, we're still going to have the verbiage of farm animals that are in our language, and we're going to have to change that again, too. Once we change it to include one farm animal, correct me if I'm wrong, Eric or Mike, once we open the door to one farm animal, how do you then say no to someone who comes up and already said no to the pig? How do we come and say no to the next person that wants to have the next animal and comes to us with the same information and the same sorts of information that you're bringing today? Again, it's an arbitrary decision we're going to make. It's a can of worms once we open. I just want to be sure we're doing this with all due clarity and responsibility. And I thank you so much for bringing all this information. But I just want to caution everyone, we've got issues we still have to think about as far as enforcement
and I think
some of this is even less that is, you know, with our police chief and our code enforcers. What can we logistically truly do here?
Well, if we do a permit, we make a permit, do a permit fee that'll cover the expenses of having us to do hours to do a couple of checks, you know, week a year, check a month to kind of see. And we can't do it as a trial. We should remove our garage sale ordinance. We remove our garage sale ordinance to give it as a trial, and if we find it doesn't work, then we'll back it up. I don't see if there's, everything's laid down in the all 5 minutes. I don't see anything wrong with possibly doing a trial.
Right.
And they can get open saying, if we do find out that, this is great, it works out great. You know, people are happy, they're getting healthier, and their families are, whatever the hinder factor, but if we also find out that we are having a problem where we have cases of salmonella and we find out that somebody has the poop in their back, then we can reevaluate it.
That's the last issue I hear now. You're talking about hens as pets, and actually you're looking at them as an agricultural benefit more so than a pet. I mean, obviously most pets are brought in at night and they're not left outside, yet I don't think our ordinance is available for hens to allow for pets to go to the outside overnight. I'm not sure that that's even allowed.
I don't think
it's allowed. So, again, I just want to make sure we're dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, looking at all the, everything that we're going to get the next person I'm here for, I want to make sure that we're being really, really careful that it gets stamped and approved or disapproved. It's for all the right reasons and with all the right caveats.
And, I think the slippery slope are arguing again, how do you limit it to just chickens? How do you do that?
And that's pretty arbitrary, actually.
I just took a look at the village code just earlier today, and chapter, section 5.44, I think he's fallen asleep here. allows for raffles. And so the slippery slope argument, and I say this because there's any code, any part of the code, any section you can look at, and you can say there's just a brief argument for any of it. With section 5.44 that talks about raffles, it allows for raffles. Well, what about a casino night? Okay, there's a slippery slope argument. You've allowed for raffles, but now can you allow for casino night? Same thing, the section 5.44 tells who can have a raffle. And organizations that are defined within that section, in that chapter. And again, so what if you're not one of those organizations that's defined? Here's the slippery slope argument for that. Can I come in and say, how about me? This labor organization is having a raffle. How about me? Can I have one? So I can look at many different sections of the code and find something that somebody else can say, well, you're allowing this, so how about this? So I think we just got to, don't just shut the door because there's a potential. And as I understand your argument, and that's all I'm saying is don't shut the door. Just take a look at that and understand that there are multiple sections in the code currently.
That's what we're addressing today is this one, so I'd like to keep it just for particular.
But it's just one of those things, again, let's don't shut the door. In fact, my argument, or my discussion last time that we were here, is that the village, the homeowners association, just because the homeowners association out there has a prohibition for this kind of pet, doesn't mean that the village should just automatically say, no, we're not going to allow it either. And as Mr. Zimmerman pointed out, it may be good business because all of the homeowners associations around say no to chickens, that the village say no to chickens as well. But one thing that I was trying to stress is we need to take a step back and take a look at the reason why those homeowners associations may have a prohibition. I would be willing to bet that the reason that there's a prohibition in most of those homeowners associations is because they use cookie-cutter bylaws and rules and regulations. So what has been created for a homeowners association in Ohio may be the reason why they have that language in here. Or they may have just taken a look at the village code. And they say, oh, the village code says no chickens, cows, horses, pigs. So we're going to say the same thing in our homeowners association. Again, just because the homeowners associations have said no, doesn't mean that automatically the village should say no. The village should take a look at it and understand the reasoning behind why homeowners associations may have said that. If they have all actually addressed the situation and said, no, we don't want it, then that's a good reason for the village to also say we don't want it. But just to say it point blank, just because they've done that, I think we need to look into the reasoning behind that. About passing changes to homeowners associations too. I think there was some confusion we were discussing that last time. And I'd like to point out, at least in our homeowners association for Valley Lakes, the way that a rule is changed in the Valley Lakes rules and regulations is a majority vote of the board of the homeowners association. It doesn't have to go to a judge. Doesn't have to have a referendum or anything like that. It's just basically a homeowners association is a contract. It's a contract with the homeowners. They're all agreeing. They vote in somebody, a board, to make the decision. And then if there's an amendment or a change, something, that's how that's done. There was one other thing I wanted to point out. I guess that's it.
I've been sitting on my HOA now for 8-9 years, something of that nature. And for us, it's within the declaration that's already filed with the county. For us to make a change of this type would require a referendum within our HOA. And I think that's a very costly procedure within the HOA. And I speak of this through experience because, I mean, even we have several residents who just want a clothesline. I mean, how simple a clothesline. But a referendum is expensive, and to ask an HOA to go through that again, I just want to be sure that if we're going to open this can of worms and we're going to make changes, that we're not putting undue hardships on other associations beyond just Valley Lakes or any of our sectors. Again, I just want to be sure we've got all the I's dotted, all the T's crossed, and everyone can live with the decision cohesively that will be made.
And I agree. And just because the village may say, now we are allowing chickens, it doesn't force any homeowners association to do anything. Homeowners associations can say, we're not going to do anything. But if they get enough people within that homeowners group to say, yeah, we think we need to take a look at this too. The village allows for chain link fences. Many homeowners associations do not. And so just because the village has said that they're allowing it, doesn't mean that all the homeowners associations now have to take up the cause and say, okay, well, now we've got to do a referendum or we have to make a decision as to whether or not we should allow chain link fences. No, but the first step is the village. If the village doesn't do that, there's no sense in the homeowners association even looking at it because they can't. It doesn't matter what they say. They could say, we want cows, and
And I kind of see that, I have no pun intended, although it does kind of fit. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Should we be asking the HOAs or should we be asking the homeowners for the village to make the decision first? I think maybe it's something we should all be doing together.
If I can interject some things that I've just noted in today's conversation. And you asked that the board do consider, and you were here 3 weeks ago, and the board has considered. Hopefully everybody has done a little bit of investigations. And thank you for coming back. A couple of the things that I've heard, and I agree that no matter what type of restrictions you put on the types of livestock, farm animals that you allow, it's going to open up the door for more argument, whatever that is. Also, there was mention of the size of lot requirements and that some municipalities were looking at reducing requirements from a full acre to a quarter acre, which measures approximately 100 by 100 feet. That's still a pretty large lot, much larger than I'm sure that's of any lots in Lakewood Grove. Valley Lakes, and probably Lakewood Grove, and probably Silver Leaf then. You know, and I see here even in the photo of the chicken coop, which I might say is a very handsome chicken coop, but I can also tell just by the photo that there's not a nearby neighbor. This is a large lot. We also mentioned Naperville and Evanston passing codes, and we were talking about enforcement. Naperville and Evanston, both communities, have a public health department. We do not. And that public health department is staffed with inspectors that can help enforce these codes. We do not. Another photo that you brought in is the photo of the chickens here, which is great for a petting zoo. And I love the idea of having kids involved with it. I would hate the idea of my neighbor's yard looking like that. And last but not least, what I did, I looked on the internet, I read a few articles, but more important than that, we were talking about the decision of the board. And any board is a group of people that represents the people that put them there. In the last 3 weeks, I wish I had kept count of this. I haven't. I've had quite a few email responses, and I've talked to several residents. And unfortunately, the responses have been the same. I would not like chickens in my neighbor's backyard. That's what I've heard from the people. And myself would agree with that. We talked about small-scale farming being the answer to some of the diseases and better health. And again, it's exactly that, farming. We're talking about a residential area. There's a separation. And the codes are enforced to put in what the people has asked of the board. Yes, sir?
Not to cut you off.
Yeah.
How would a referendum on the ballot when the next ballot comes up so that the whole village can vote on this and get over the building?
It would take a resolution of the board for the next general election at that
time. What we probably need to do again is, from what I see, is there any more people that want to talk about this issue? I'm asking the mayor. Please let everyone else talk about it.
Yes.
And I'll go back and ask my question.
My name is Rebecca Butcher. I actually live in Fox Lake. I don't know if you guys follow the news at all. We recently petitioned for backyard hunts. I do already have backyard hunts. I'm sort of like a barometer. We actually need to have the most of the past, but we're having some issues with water bills right now, with a lot of arguing. But I just wanted to kind of maybe put some fears that you use around me. I only have 2 chickens, and I personally live on a very small lot, and I have no fences. And my direct neighbors, didn't even know that I had chickens for 6 months. But they're in a coop, and they only come out when I'm in the yard. And to be honest, because they're prey animals, they will only stray from their coop about from me to that computer. They want to be here. They won't, if they're out like a dog, they won't run into the street, they won't run after your neighbors. They're very quiet. They don't have any odor. I clean them once a week. It's similar to cleaning a bird cage. I have newspaper and bottom. There's been no diseases. Chicks that you get from a hatchery, call me vaccinated for, I believe it's pronounced leucidosis. It's something that is in smaller, like, you know, younger chicks. But as for them getting salmonella or getting the avian flu, they can only get that from other birds around. And the chances of that happening in a small flock are incredibly low. And even, to be honest, if my flock of two did get that, they would probably both just die and not transmit it to anybody. So that's kind of, you know, considering what always brings up the disease. And the washing of the hands, if your flock isn't infected with salmonella, they can't be infected with salmonella unless you infect them by bringing in a bird that is sick or, you know, feeding on chicken scraps. Like, some people will feed chickens things they shouldn't be eating, raw things, rocks and things. It's, you know, a bad practice. That's the only way to infect the hardy salmon flock. I'm trying to think of anything else that I can tell you guys. They haven't been a gateway animal. There's nobody in my town that wants anything else. And actually, we discussed that in our village meeting. And the way we put in place to prevent that from happening, the slippery slope is chickens require such a small footprint. In the city of Chicago, I'm sure you're familiar with how small their lots are. Chickens are allowed in the city of Chicago. They basically need enough room to scratch around. And so goats or pigs or horses or whatever people may approach you for need far more acreage. So that's an easy thing to squash right away. It's just you don't have enough acreage on a residential lot. So that kind of addresses the, you know, the slippery slope issue. And then the other issue was on just nuisance. And most villages already have nuisance laws in place for noise, for odor, for, you know, similar to if my neighbor had five dogs and didn't pick up at them, he would be in violation of the nuisance law. So that's kind of how we did it in Fox Lake. We capped it at 4 hens, no roosters, no slaughter on the property. And actually, we don't even have a lot line restriction. It's just away from any resident. So I can't have a chicken coop 2 feet from my neighbor's window. And that's really all it is. Like, they're encouraged to be in a backyard. Mine are in on run. Unless I'm outside. So if I'm working in the garden, they'll come out with me in the garden. But they don't go anywhere. They never, there's no fence, they don't go in my neighbor's yard. So there's been no issues. And as I said, my neighbors were unaware and had chickens for 6 months. And I have no fences. So there's, like I said, been zero issues. All my neighbors are happy with them. I've had neighbors approaching and, you know, starting a flock of their own. I steer them away from it because it's still not allowed in our, you know, town. But I'm hoping that it'll be passed shortly. And we've had support. There were people who were iffy. We've had several meetings. There's been informational meetings at libraries, which we encouraged, as did one meeting by one. And once people see presentations about it or come to, I've had people come visit my booth. There's a Windy City Coop tour. You can go see coops in Chicago that are on the car smaller lot. Most people don't even realize the chickens are there. And once they see it, it's sort of like Beverly Hills. Like, people have it in their heads and it looks like, and they see certain pictures, but it's really, it's not like that at all. You would barely even know. It's similar, my neighbors have rabbits, and the coop looks pretty much like my chicken coop. So I wish I would have some pictures for you guys of my coop, but unfortunately I don't. This one that passed around my phone. But yeah, if you guys have any questions for me, I've had them for a year and a half. I made it through winter, and that's another thing, the winter. People who, I mean, just because your village loves dogs, not everybody in your town has a dog. It's the same with chickens. You don't want to hear from chickens. Generally, people who want chickens are going to take good care of them. Because you do have to go out in the winter and clean them. You have to make sure their water is fluid. You have to let them out in the morning, put them away at night. Most of them have a locking door just so if there is any, you know, predators around. One night, in the whole year and a half I've had chickens, we had a raccoon one night. He realized he couldn't get in. He has never been back. There was somebody who took prints on the coop or something. So, I mean, once it's secure, animals are going to go out there. They don't have, you know, multiple nights to waste time on something they can't get. My feed is in a Rubbermaid container, which has no mouse problems. In the winter, I take their feed up at night and put it in the shed, and then I put it back out for them in the morning. So there's been no vermin problems either. And when children, my neighbors have a lot of kids, they come help me collect eggs and give the chickens. Chickens like dandelions, they don't feed them dandelions. And I do, I have hand sanitizer out there, and I encourage them to wash their hands. It's like anything, if your child has a turtle, or a snake, or a reptile, they all carry salmonella as well. It's just good hand washing. I mean, even if you're letting a dog with your hand, you shouldn't wash your hands. I don't know if you guys have any questions for me.
I
out of 2,000, how many acres do you get?
I get one every day from each hen, so it's 2 acres. It's perfect because it's just me and the husband. Like I said, the village, in our ordinance, we're going to allow for 4 because they do drop off on laying. And there will be no slaughter, obviously, so you'd want to rotate in younger hens. And actually, another issue that came up is people aren't so attached to them as pets and want to stop laying. There's actually several farms nearby you can take it to say process it for you if you're not. Like mine, I will do that. Even if they don't lay another egg ever, they can stay in my yard. But people, you know, are a little less bleeding heart than me, I guess. And so, but there's farms you can take them to, and it's a nominal fee, and they clean it for you. It's just like bringing it to a butcher. So that's what people will do when they're trying to get old and stuff laying. But we wanted the option to rotate it. And you can buy just a little bit of rooster beer. When you buy from the hatchery, you can buy specs like chicks. So you make sure that you're not getting any roosters. So you don't have to worry about suddenly opening and start crowing, you know. So. That's fine. It's very small. It's 22 Rushmore Road. Back Lake, Illinois. 50020. Just sort of inform my neighbors, they're fresh renters and they're not the best. Frankly, the renters are creating a bigger problem with their crazy like tarp that they have like covering all of their possessions. Like chickens are the least anybody's worried. But and there's actually another speaker flock of chickens, I don't know their address, and I think they prefer to be on the down low. No one can know they have them except for me. And they live right on the lake and their house is, I wanna say it's like an $850,000 house on the lake. It's nice, no one even knows they're there. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other public comments?
Good evening. My name is Ed Furman, F-U-H-R-M-A-N-N, from Round Lake Beach. This is 214 Sprucewood Court. I'm here even though from a different municipality because cities and villages look at what their neighbors do when items come up for consideration. So even though this is solidly your issue, my village would take a look and vice versa, because we do all these kinds of things. For the last 4 years, I've been the head of the Round Lake Area Chapter of CLUC, Citizens for the Legalization of Urban Chicken Keeping. Probably read about me in the papers a couple years ago when this came up in the Round Lake Beach area. I know in the interest of time and the remainder of the agenda, there's a lot coming on, so I'm not going to put out information. I will give you the board a loaner copy of about 80 pictures of backyard chicken coops in different settings that can be circulated around and kept for several weeks so you can familiarize yourself with this. Part of the unease of all of this is we are culturally unfamiliar with food animals and aspects like this now because we've been zoned and separated for the ordinances and everything else. And what happened is something that was good initially getting nasty, cold, spewing factories out of places like London and Paris. If you ever read Oliver Twist or anything like that, you know, that it used to be very working-class, breeding places. And when those were separated, those cities became jewels of Europe. And the planners on coming to the United States, as we expanded here, said, we're going to start separating uses of property. And, that generally worked out pretty good. In the early 1900s, additional zoning came about and set the precedent that the government can tell people what to do with their property to a large degree. That's evolved into different residential and commercial and industrial. So if a little is good, a lot must be great. And that's what happens. We had too much of a good thing that separated our working animals and our food animals out of the residential areas, which still in the rest of the world, they're there. Not like cows in your backyard, but the smaller ones like chickens and bunnies. It's very standard about any place else. I'd like to offer myself this for as long as this may be up for discussion by the board, weeks, months, however long it goes, as a source of information. As was alluded to earlier, I did give presentations just last week, Thursday. I gave a presentation at the Palatine Public Library. Groups about backyard hens. Started at 6:30 and they had to kick us out at the end because that much interest from that many people. The questions, especially from Trustee Trippan, outstanding. But right now, without that cultural connection, you don't even know, and I'm not saying anything bad here, don't even know necessarily the right questions to ask. So this does take a bit of re-acclimatization to what's involved with this. In the last 4 years, I've watched close to a dozen different villages and towns bring this issue up. In some cases, it was researched in past, like Plainfield and Niles, places like that. Others, Crystal Lake and McHenry, around Lake Beach, shut down. Either way, it does take time, the reconnection, and the objections which may come up are almost all, I'm not trying to belittle anybody, almost all fear-based, because without the knowledge, your worst fears come in to fill that vacuum. What about noise? What about smell? What about property values? What about diseases? What about this, that, and the other thing? If we had not brought dogs in from farms and ranches and out in the wild when we started having villages, and just today you tried to have someone come up and say, I'd like to bring my 60-pound dog onto my eighth of an acre lot. Fangs and teeth and 1 pound smelly dog bones in the yard a couple times a day. And, oh yes, I'll clean up after him when he walks. And yes, it's my responsibility for vaccination. And you know what? Let's let everybody else let these howling dogs in. That kind of thing. You'd look at it having a very critical eye. You've got a bit of acceptance on that. Same thing with cats and other critters. You don't have that connection with this, and it needs to be kind of reestablished, or at least get the knowledge on that. So I got a lot of information. The best news I can give you in my last 30 seconds here, every question you've got has already been answered. If you don't know what question to ask, please ask us. We will help get the information to answer. Because what you really need to do, I'm not telling you what to do, but how come it works every place where they try it? The villages, the cities, the towns that allow back their chickens, it works, and they don't change their mind, and they don't pull back, especially for property values. Not one municipality anywhere in the country has ever, ever reversed their decision because of a negative impact on property values. And so look at what works. We can't force feed you from the fire hydrant all at once. It takes time for them to digest this information. So we would love to help provide that for you, show you examples of the coops that are out there nearby, and unless you have any questions for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, right now, we've heard public comment, and I'd like to thank everybody for coming and sharing your views. I want to ask the board if they have a feeling on this. Do they want to move this forward? Do you recommend not taking this forward? Do you need more study time?
You know, we can be
HLA
summit from time to time. Why don't we bring this to the HLA summit and see how the HOAs would feel about this, because quite frankly, like I said before, no pun intended, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Will it be the HOA that's willing to change, or will it be the village? Let's see what the consensus seems to be throughout the HOA, so we know what kind of possible resistance or support we're going to get.
Can the HOA allow something that the village doesn't allow?
If the village expressly says no, may they not.
So if we're currently already saying no, the HOA already has figured. So basically they need us to go forward with it first from that standpoint. And then it's up to those HOA residents to decide if this is something they would like to see. And then they could go with their HOA in their board meetings and say if that's something that they pay their HOA fee. I write my check twice a year. I don't like to, but I do. And if it's something that once all those options are evaluated within my HOA, and I still feel, and the rest of the residents are still passionate about, they're going to know that there's going to be a cost involved, and it may affect their HOA fee. I think that should be left up to the individual HOA.
And I think that's what I'm looking for, to see from the HOA if they feel this is something they are willing to support or deny.
Well, if we have one HOA that's interested and three that aren't.
Well, actually, I already spoken to one of their board members, and this is likely to apply within Stratley Plains. Will it someplace else? Would we be spinning our wheels to make this an effort that the HOAs are not going to get on board? I think we need to work together.
Okay,
none of us are spinning wheels, but we're coming up with the, you know, the discussion together. We can do that in the HOA summit.
Yeah, I'm open to other questions. Is every single property in the village around Lake and H is involved in an HOA?
No.
No. So, quite a few, yes. But the HOAs already have the rules in place to restrict them. What about those that don't? We could say
when it becomes village, then it would become village. But again, you're taking on one small part or part, and you're ignoring the others. I think that we should be all. But we stand for all people, so we should be looking for the input from all people.
And I understand we should definitely discuss it with, you know, get out there, talk with the residents a little bit more, and really see where everybody's mindset is with it. But I have to say, from the point of saying, does it need to go to HOA Summit or does it need to go to Oxford? I think it needs to be here in Oxford because HOA already has it in place. They already have it restricted. And that's up to that each individual HOA to decide if they're going to allow or not allow. When you buy your house at that HOA, you already know you have an HOA and you have to follow specific rules in addition to what your village is. That's what I was not happy as soon as I pulled through both and saw all the things I had to get approval for. If I wanted to change the color of my front door, I would get HOA approval. You know, but I bought my property knowing that.
Right.
Here, yes, in the village around Lake, you know, not everybody has the HOA. So they didn't buy those extra restrictors. They come here and try and ask for us to make, you know, the exception or change things. And then, great, it worked out great for them. They choose to do it, they choose not to do it. But if the HOA, then the residents of that HOA wants to have that change, if Valley Lake has a majority of their citizens said they want it and they want to pursue it, and their residents are willing to pay an increased HOA fee for whatever changes may be involved with it, let that be their decision. But I think, so from this standpoint, I think we need to make precedent with us first,
right,
and then let the HOAs on an individual basis decide what's best for them. Let their boards have their board meetings with them and say, yes, we want to allow this, or no, we're going to keep things the way they are, or you know what, it's going to cost every resident or every member of our HOA an additional $500 a year. Okay, maybe 10 to 15, you know, may or may not be worth $500 an additional a year for them. But let that be, you know, let them lay out all the factors for what it would do for them to have an impact on them. Maybe it'll only be $100, you know, and they'll be willing to have a one-time fee for the kitchen and do something. But let it be, because it's going to vary differently between each HOA. It's totally similar, but their fees might be slightly different depending on how they're actually structured in the bylaws. Say they have to make a decision. But they can't move forward and do it until, allow it until after we allow it.
We've had topic for about an hour now. I don't know if there's a resolve in sight. Does the board feel the same?
Yeah, I'll see it. It's being resolved tonight. I think that we need more time to research and make sure that we're making the right decision.
Let's move this forward then to
the next
committee of the whole meeting.
Absolutely.
I invite everybody to do as much research as you can and to try to make a decision on what is right for the village on your own. Bring those topics here. We'll have more discussion about it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. If I need to do something new, I go through this view and my chickens and chairs. They're going through their first molt, and they look very undignified right now. So they're not sick or anything. They molt once a year in the fall.
they have a lot of feathers to grow before the snow flies.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. I thought that it was kind of inconvenient. They move in the fall, but it has to do with shortness of the days. And they don't, feathers don't fall out until they're coming in. Like, so they feather out pretty quickly, but right now they're just real quick.
Thank you, everybody. We'll move this forward to the next committee, the whole meeting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let me try to find my place. Going back up to discussion on the SBA incubator program. Trustee Fry, anything new to report on SBA?
No.
Thank you, sir.
I'm thinking of leaving on there because that's the work.
Thank you. We will do that. Steve, anything under finance? Thank you. Public Works.
Thank you, Mayor.
I think the only thing we really want to spend time on is the sanitary system, right? I mean, the Julie membership is pretty straightforward. The Parkway Tree Replacement Program, I know we talked about it a little bit, but I don't know if there's a lot. It wasn't a big update, was there?
Well, I would like to spend a little bit of time on that.
Okay. And then there's the construction engineering for the Hart Road, and I think...
We're going to pull that.
We're going to pull that one?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so it's just really the presentation for sanitary sewage, and I think if you read your information, what we're going to be proposing, what Ron's going to be proposing, is the creation of a new sanitary district, which is something I haven't had the opportunity to do since I've been a trustee. So this is kind of new. So we've got a presentation to put run us through.
Yes.
And so I would just turn it over to Ron for that, unless there's anything in particular.
Correct. Just for the record, we're going to move the Julie membership forward.
Yes. Yes.
Very good. Ron will talk Parkway Trees, and we're pulling off of the agenda the construction engineering service agreement for the Hart Road construction project.
Okay.
Thank you, Trustee Wiles. While Mike is setting up a PowerPoint presentation, I do want to hand out the slide presentation and give just a little bit of background. Hopefully the board knows we are served by Lake County from a sanitary sewer collection system, i.e. our sanitary sewers connected to counties, and county conveys the member communities, and I'll come back to that, wastewater to the Fox Lake regional wastewater treatment plant, also called the water reclamation facility. And that system was set up, as I'm told, about 1980. That's it for a brief background. The purpose of this presentation is for all of us to better understand what are the problems, consequences of stormwater, rainwater getting into our sanitary sewer system? Harvey Mitchell here in this is inflow and infiltration. And is there a need to do something about that problem? And from my perspective, there is a need. And it's both at the local level to reduce what's called sanitary sewer overflows, or another term is surcharging, where water comes out of the manhole rather than stays in the sanitary sewer.
Ron, can I interject something here? With the need for it. The meetings that I've been to with this, what the need is, and correct me if I'm mistaken, I've been to only a couple of meetings since I was elected, but this is mandated by the state. If there is an SSO, a sanitary sewer overflow, and my question was, why do we have to address a very rare occurrence of a flood of biblical proportions? First of all, those floods happen more common than you realize. The 100-year flood happens about every 4 years. But I was told at a meeting that once there is a discharge, once there is an SSO, if the state would choose, they could stop a municipality from having any more hookups to the sanitary line, which means that we wouldn't be able to build any residential. We would not be able to connect any new buildings, commercial, industrial, or anything else. Am I correct?
That is correct. And that's a key consideration, that's a regional consideration as well as a local municipality consideration. And that's why the county, from a governing standpoint, has chosen to try and do something with all the member communities. And so what I would ask is we try and absorb this packet of information. I need some feedback, not necessarily tonight. Please ask whatever questions now or later one-on-one. The county is going forward, and we as a member of the Northwest Regional Wastewater Treatment Organization really don't have a way to opt out of this. So, but we do need to understand it, because the questions will come from our residents. Why are you telling me I now need to pay an additional $1.50 per month per residential unit for the next 20 years? And so this is not just an academic discussion. It's going to have some need to communicate out in a credible manner to our citizenry. And I wouldn't have the right to have on that.
So, Ron, I wonder if it might, I mean, I think if everybody agrees that we have the problem, I think maybe, unless there's any questions on the need for it, perhaps we jump to the slide that talks about the alternatives. So there are three different alternatives.
Correct.
We're pursuing one of them, but there are, of the three alternatives, and it's on slide 8 there, you can see, you know, this is by far, the alternative being sought is by far the least expensive of the three.
And that would be on?
That's slide 8, page 8.
This is a DVD. It's a movie.
Yeah, I don't know what we have in charge.
It's 5:06 once it starts. And this was produced by Lake County Public Works.
This is the same information here, though, right?
That is correct.
This slide presentation. Right. Does anybody want to have the need for that?
I'm okay with the slide, personally. I don't know if
we can
Does everybody know what this program is going to do?
Is the German consortium?
The actual physical effort of the program to divert the water to keep the sanitary overflows into the lagoon project. Are we aware of that?
The agenda item summary, hopefully on a small scale, has a color copy of the sanitary district lagoons being converted to sanitary sewage detention facility to take and store up to 20 million gallons during the wet weather flow, much like a stormwater detention basin. All right, so to Dr. Clemens' suggestion, this has been studied. This was not just a 10-minute, what can we do? And both the policy committee, which the mayor is a representative on, and the technical committee, which I've been a member of in my tenure. Of the options from a cost standpoint, the conversion of the sanitary district lagoons to sanitary sewage detention facility, estimated cost is $7.1 million. I'll come back in just a moment. That does not guarantee we live happily ever after. Because if the projections for Lake County growth are to be realized, at some point there will either need to be an upgrade to the wastewater treatment facility in Fox Lake, or an additional storage facility at the treatment plant. That's the $13.7 million, estimated to be needed 10 to 15 years from now. The community going it alone to reduce their local I&I sufficient to eliminate the need for those two detention facilities. Estimated. This one is kind of a loose number, but in substance is $68 million. And then we're not going to try and reduce I&I. We're not going to try and reduce the deep flow. We're just going to move it and treat it. That's the $96 million estimated. So as bad as this sounds, that which is proposed is the least expensive. Let me then try and step through this. Here with this. I don't necessarily need to go back to this slide, but color photo kind of thing for the next further well. I'm sorry, I can't.
By the way, in case you don't know, I&I is in flow and infiltration, which is the cause of this.
So, projects moving forward, contract is about to be let for hauling away the sludge that is filling the lagoons, and that will happen in the November time frame. We will be slightly impacted as somewhere around 100 to 300 trucks will be coming out of the Roundlet Sanitary District, heading south on Sunset Drive to get up onto 134 to land apply this sludge somewhere down in the local area. Was successful in getting in that project some money for repair on Sunset Drive as those loaded trucks will
further exasperate the pavement conditions. That's a short-term plan. 2014 is the intended construction of the lagoon improvements, deepening the lagoon, putting in pump facilities, and some landscaping, fencing, not surprisingly, around Lake Beach residents directly affected and asked for such. So, of the 7.1 million, the county is putting up 2.0 million. The committees have looked at, okay, how do we deal with the remaining 5.1 million? Illinois EPA has a loan program for 2% interest, 20-year payback. The other option that was explored was a bond for 30 years, but at a higher interest rate. So the committees have put forward the request to Illinois EPA seeking the loan program. Did not have final word back, but all the informal discussion, my understanding, then will be approved by the Illinois EPA. That's where the $1.50 estimated cost per resident has come from. And estimated, my understanding, meaning there might be some minor adjustment. That's over $1.50 per resident. One, or just two final comments. Businesses that have higher water usage, higher wastewater generation, will be paid more based on what all the residential equipment. Pretty straightforward number crunching. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Please go do try to absorb what's in the handout. And tonight, next meeting, clearly would encourage us to have some discussion and some strategizing. How do we communicate this to the residents?
Right. Okay. Residential switching set per resident? Set per resident or per household?
I'm sorry, per household.
Per household.
Okay.
Residential customer.
Per resident, so kind of, I wanted to make sure I had that clarified.
Per unit.
Per resident, yeah, unit.
Businesses pay it too.
Thank you. That's just what I
want
to clarify real
quick. Apartment building and a single family house, which each of them are residential units.
An apartment building that has six, may have six families living in it versus a house that has one.
If it's a six-unit apartment building,
it has six
units,
right.
They were charged.
Because right. Oh, yeah. He's just as one.
No,
I'm getting confused.
No.
Yeah.
Well, everybody that has a water meter will
get their own individual.
Right. Oh, that's okay. Yes. Yeah. One building, one meter, it's a lot of money. There's six units there.
But how do they decide who gets what bill?
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you build it?
MOA
can
build
on
one building, one meter.
The
and then they just break it down.
They break it down.
Yeah.
Well, I know that. Go ahead.
Well, and this is important. I'm so glad to ask. This is a flat rate. Whether you use 10 gallons a month or 10,000 gallons a month, if it's a residential unit, you a single person, you and a family of 10, going to pay $1.50 a month.
I just wanted the clarification, like the per meter.
Per meter.
Yeah,
that's a good way to put it.
Per meter. I like it per meter. At least clarify exactly, because if we have like a situation where we figure out one or
not per our meter. In old days, it would be an example. 1 meter for six units. How the condominium or townhome association chooses to cut that up to them. It will be $6.50 per month charge.
No. No. Well, no. So we have $5.50 per meter. We don't bill, they're okay.
Forget about us billing this.
How
are we going to get paid from these people if they don't have a water bill that they pay? Is this going on our village bill? Whether they have or don't have water. I mean, if they don't have a water meter, they're not getting a village bill.
Right.
So how are we going to...
Chief?
Apartment complex be considered a business?
That's what I'm about to ask.
Because for commercial use, there is a formula that is figured out. And again, I'm not sure, Mike, can you help with the definition of residential consumer equivalent?
Customer.
Residential customer equivalent. And I think that was the topic with charging businesses, et cetera, that have greater flow.
That's a line clear.
And I think that'll be applied.
My family is greater flow. Let's put it that way. Not just businesses. Multi-family should have a greater flow than the buck 50.
Yeah.
Right.
So, good first question. Let me get clear clarification on the multi-unit complex as to how much each residential unit is.
I have a question.
Please.
How does the condominiums or apartment buildings or whatever they are, how do they pay their water?
They pay through the management company.
They pay through the management company.
Okay. So the management company, how they build their residence?
So, no, I really don't care what the management company does. What I'm saying is that I'm going back. I used to be president of a condominium. We got one water bill. That one water bill looked at 50 or 75 units that was in that condominium. And we got a bill from that. Now, if you charge me $1.50 for every unit that's in there, then I got a bill of 75 or 100 or whatever amount that's in there. And I have to pay it. And I pass that on incrementally in the form of an assessment. I don't see why it's any different. Just because I have one meter doesn't make sense.
Because in Cambridge Courts, I don't know, what is Cambridge Courts?
Well, what's the difference? You make the decision. You have to have it if you're gonna do that, and it costs you $1.50 per unit, and that's what they're gonna assess, and that'll be the end of it.
I know in some of the meetings that...
Well, not arbitrary, but I mean, this is the cost of living in with indoor plumbing.
Right. And I know also that there were formulas, which I do not have. There was conversation about formulas for commercial businesses. Mm-hmm. This type of company uses X amount. This industrial thing uses X amount.
Right.
They have information on that, and I'm sure they have information that would apply to multi-family dwellings for, I'm almost certain that topic was discussed.
Well, Haysville has multi-family units, Charlie Beach has multi-family units, so I mean, everybody's got a box like this, so they all have to address it, and that's what they address somewhere.
And I'm almost certain that it has been.
Yes,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, let's get some clarity.
Let's make a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Give me some clarity.
Perfect. Thank you.
The other matter I didn't say on the end is say that this train is leaving this station January 2014. So it's taken arguably too long to get to the committees putting together a brief presentation. It should not be too much surprise. It's been sort of a contentious issue. Anyway, so we do need to next meeting, wrestle with this one some more, and hopefully in early November agree on how we should communicate this to our citizenry.
Yeah, so I think the clarifying, the ask is not whether we do this or not. We don't have a choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
The option has been chosen, you know, the starting option has been chosen, the funding option has already been chosen. We just have to ask for us is how to position it with our residents.
Right, exactly.
I know. You know what, I was just thinking real quick, we need a note on the water bill and then directing them to the website, you know, from right there, we can put a lock on a bigger explanation.
Yeah.
Presentation. I mean, just a little blurb. If you're trying to set out something separate, I mean, it's just going to cost us too much. But a blurb saying, you know, this month, starts off with the surcharge, or a program that calls the regional access for capacity. Please go to the website and go for further information and talk about that.
About a month and a half ago, I'm not sure the date, I think I emailed all of you a draft letter that the board had made up. I don't know if you have a copy of that. Steve had it, but that letter has since been amended. And I will, did I get a copy of it? I'll find it and I'll send it to all of you. And it was a letter designed to give to the residents. But that, is that a copy of it, Steve? Yeah, and that has been amended. There's been some verbiage that was changed on it that the board liked. Yeah, I'll find the amended one. I don't know if I even have a copy of it, but I'll get it and I'll send it to everybody.
Are we going to send it to the residents?
Well, that's going to be the topic. That's what we're doing, is how do we inform it. The board that I sit on, which is different from Ron's, came up with this draft. Maybe you guys talked about it also. And this is something that 8 people, I think, are on that board, including some county board members, and put quite a bit of time and effort into this on how do we notify our residents and what's a good descriptive means of describing this program.
I personally would think a letter to every resident that's going to be affected by this for 20 years deserves a letter. Yes, I agree with the water bill that's there, but 8% of them might read it. What about that 20%? I don't think sending a newsletter.
You get a letter like this, and for which one?
Yes, for the debt.
Which would be cheaper on those.
Right. Yep,
you know,
I agree.
I think a letter. I watched the water bill just briefly come through, and it's got a 4-page newsletter every time, and it's informative. And I really think they deserve a letter.
I agree. I'll find that draft. I'll give it to everybody and we can talk about it.
Sure.
Any other questions? Well, thank you for the attention to this one.
Thanks for the research on the presentation.
And we briefly talked to the career recycling program.
Briefly?
Hopefully you had a chance to review the agenda items and a brief update on our tree replacement program. And we have put out on the street an email to local nurseries and local tree service companies. There's over 20 emails we've sent out. That being give those nurseries, tree service companies, our request for proposal to submit what trees they have that meet our species list. What will the tree service companies be looking for cost-wise to remove and the dead tree and plant new tree. We have also started emailing out to those residents that have expressed an interest in the cost sharing program. And so this is all coming together. The key action would be the proposal we received this coming Friday, 3:30 p.m., from those interested nurseries and those interested tree service companies. We're encouraging each interested nursery to partner with a tree service company, which will make life logistically a whole bunch easier than them operating independently. That'll be a factor in our basis of recommendation to you for who we award contracts to. Not the primary consideration, but a consideration. How long have they been in business? What's their track record? Do they have references that are other jurisdictions? Are they a member of the nursery organization, horticultural organization? This is as much about quality as it is about cost. Cost is not as much of a consideration. It's taken us longer, Laura and myself, to get out on the street. So my request to the board is to act on our recommendations at a special meeting next Wednesday, rather than waiting until the 21st. We can go potentially into mid-November for tree planting, but the sooner the trees get in the ground and get a little bit of rooting out established, and the greater the potential of them doing well through the winter and take off running, if I could say it that way, in the springtime. So would the board entertain a special board meeting next Wednesday?
Or a continuation of this meeting?
Thank you.
Until next Wednesday.
Actually, it would have to be a special meeting because per ordinance, we don't take final action at a committee of the whole.
Correct. Oh, you're going to have to keep asking for follow-up.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? What does that mean, Mike?
Yeah, we'll have a special meeting, not a continuation.
On the 14th.
16th? 16th. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's a Wednesday?
Correct.
I think this is extremely important, and we should move this forward as quickly as possible.
So we should be in a very good position to make that decision that evening, right?
I will have homework over the weekend, as will Laura, and she and I then will get our heads together Monday morning. Whatever questions we may have, we will go to those submitted nurseries. Tree service companies and have a recommendation to email out, I'll say, by noontime Tuesday.
Ron, you've already covered some of the topics of quality trees with our arborist and well-known and respected established nurseries, correct?
That is correct.
Can I
ask?
Sure.
Of the 125 trees, have you contacted all the residents that it's going to affect?
We will.
Because what if some of the residents want to do the cost sharing?
Okay. We have on the website the packet of information to include a cover letter that the mayor signed. I would encourage all of you to go to our website and review that.
But how would the residents know to go there?
And through the Homeowner Association Summit, they have helped us get started. I'm going to answer your question. Laura and or I and some of my staff will go to each of the 700
properties that have, that have a dead stick that used to be a tree.
Right, well, I'm just trying to find 145 and, that you want to plant recently, currently.
So, what I'm trying to say is we're going to do our darndest to give every resident who has an interest in getting a dead or near dead parkway tree an opportunity to participate in cost sharing. If they don't, we have about 25 to 30 residents who have contacted us and saying I'm interested in it. So they have already received the packet. When we distribute the packet of information to the other 670, I believe we'll get some definite level of interest because the information, I believe, is sufficiently clear that if you want priority in getting a replacement tree, you should consider sharing in the cost of the tree purchase.
The other reason I'm asking is because I have one of those dying trees in front of my house, and I have not been contacted, and I apologize for not reaching out to you sooner, but if it's the same for me, it might be the same for, I know my whole street is lined with dying trees, and so I'm just, my concern as a resident is that you go to this house and you want to put in this one certain type of tree, and they're like, oh no, I want, you know, a red maple or something like that. And so, I don't know if you've thought of that.
We've identified a number of species. How many?
We have 9 different species. Those were recommended by our consulting architect.
I know that. I did minutes. I know.
Okay.
Trust me.
So if you're asking, will I get a request, well, I really don't like that, but I love this species, guaranteed I'll get that request.
Well, 175 trees is a lot to put in the next 6 weeks. Not even 6 weeks.
Agreed, and that's why I want to take advantage of getting started sooner than with the October 21st board meeting.
Right, so these 175 residents have been contacted?
No.
So it's better money without having to pass it down.
What tree that they would have a preference?
That's right. Do they want a cost share?
Right.
That's what we're doing.
So well, we really don't know how many trees and what kind of each tree we should really be getting. We could be saying, hey, we want 100 red maples and 50 something, but that we actually need to invite the person for the quantity.
I will email to everybody tomorrow the packet of information as well as the request for proposal. The request for proposal sheet does list the species and our estimated quantity of these. And then said, these are estimated quantities. At some point, I need to know how many Autoglaze maples we want to purchase.
Question that I have is, did you contact the 170 people that are supposed to get those trees? And if you haven't, how would you do that to see if they want a cost share before we spend money up front? That's her question. And it's not mine.
And that's where the...
I don't care what species they are. They can be evergreen trees as far as I'm concerned. The thing is that I want to know that you ask them if they want a car share. That's all I want to know.
Every resident that has a dead or near dead parkway tree, round number 700, will receive a packet of information this week. Wait, let me explain this. This is key. Whether that resident does anything with it is up to that resident. The encouragement is if they want a replacement tree this year, they should seriously consider cost sharing. But that's not a requirement.
So if we get 40 or 50 that will actually participate financially, they will get a replacement tree this fall. Begging the question, where's the other 120 And I believe I had said this in previous updates, they will go to the subdivisions that have the highest percentage of dead trees of the total parkway trees.
How long are we giving them to respond? Once this text is going out sometime this week, it's going to take a couple days. How long are they going to get
by the end of the following week?
That to me, that's too short of a time to meet even for me as my household. If I have something that I'm working on, my budget, I'm looking at it, I'm trying to see. That's going to give me much time to really test like what I can do. And I'm going to, 2 weeks and sometimes just to look at the budget stuff. I have a harder time getting, making the time to do that. I feel like right now a lot of people put it on the back burner and not realize it, and then...
Well, that's fine. That's fine. They don't have to make a decision, remember?
Correct.
The participation was primarily for prioritization purposes, not for anything else. So if you really have an issue with a tree, you're going to respond. If you don't, to Ron's point, he's already got a sequence of areas that we're going to put trees in because we know they're already bad, like Silverleaf Blunt, right? That's an area. So we're going to go, those 175 trees are going to go there unless somebody says, hey, no, I want one and I live in where they live. And they can, so then we'll be putting them all over the place, but otherwise we're going to go in a certain area.
And please, let's not lose sight of this is year one.
Right. This is
not the
beginning.
Right.
Yeah. Let's not get too worked up about everybody having to respond within a couple week period. I mean, it's just, if we want to get trees in, if we want to get started, we've got to get started. We've got to make a decision. If your primary concern is that everybody that has a tree, gets notified and has can respond right now, which we couldn't put them all in right now anyway. We can only get about 175 in. We only have 6 weeks to work with, so it's a multi-year program. I think we just need to keep that in perspective.
Somewhere. We have to start somewhere.
Just keep that in perspective.
I think we have to accept that to this late in the season, we're kind of going to see what we're going to see. If they don't respond this year, then we notify them again of the chances next year, and hopefully we get that notification out sooner so that we can get a better fight for next year. But we have, I mean, Silverleaf Glen, whether the residents were to answer or not, that place looks pretty dismal, and that's where a lot of our trees need to go. Would we be giving them, if the resident didn't answer, but we're still going to replace the tree, then it should be on us to choose what tree's available and what we're putting in. They didn't necessarily get asked what they wanted when they were in their subdivision.
Right.
You got what you got.
That's okay. So well, most people don't even care.
If they answer and they get it and they can,
great.
All good. They don't and they won't, all good. We just place them where we need to. And then next year we get started a little sooner, maybe fix a little verbiage here and there if we need to, and ramp it up again. But I agree with
Trustee Clement.
We've got to do it. Stop talking about it. We need to get moving. So let's do it.
Thank you.
Everybody in agreement?
Yeah.
Yep. So we're going to have a special meeting called at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. It's Wednesday, correct? Mm-hmm. October 16th.
Yes. Thank you.
Special events, Halloween trick or treat.
Sounds good
to me, awful.
Can be on the water bill, we're good. Or should I already be here, something like that?
How do we identify? How do we know? Take notification.
I think normally on the water bill and on the website.
Yeah.
Our website, I know, has it.
Yeah.
Could we possibly put out a CTY just as a reminder of the date and the time and encouraging those who are participating to light their porch lights? We do that typically from year to year.
Yeah.
Has it been done? We do that?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
definitely in the best fault, but the reminder. I think the reminder at the beginning of the week is you kind of set a kind of goal.
Yeah, I mean, there's some moves here because they have all the communities to do it on the day, and all the
community for. Very good. Thank you. Hey, we've already talked about chickens.
A little more, please.
Chief, do you have anything? Administration, a tire service contract. Want me to cover that, Russ? I don't know if contract's the right word to use here, people. How this came about was a topic that's been going on for quite some time with the amount of money that we are wasting having our staff from Public Works and the police department going out when there is a maintenance bill or request that's over $250, which happens an awful lot, as you can imagine. We lose personnel going out and looking for these bids. We also have a vehicle that is held up because it can't get fixed until we get the bid. Most of the repair shops in the area don't want to even bid on it anymore because they're tired of it. They know what bids are going to go where, and so does our department heads. The chief already knows that this repair is going to be won by so-and-so, but yet we still go through the process. One of the things that we were talking about doing was eliminating or increasing the $250 limit. In the meantime, before that ever came up, Mr. Kohlmeyer from Atires County Service approached me and said that what he wanted to do to offer to the village was to get some form of exclusivity on maintaining the vehicles where he would lower his hourly shop rate from $99 down to $69 per hour. That's a significant amount under anybody who's doing work for us currently. Steve and I pulled some bills from the past, and the average shop time was 99, Steve. The average shop time was 99 from whatever provider it was. The one topic of concern that came up with Ron, and I agree with this, and everybody at staff did, is about specialty vehicles. This would be excluded from this agreement with ATIRE. That's why we mentioned, did I send it out? I sent it out in the information in my update. He wants to do the work on all of our vehicles up to and including one-ton pickup trucks. Anything that is over that in Public Works, the backer truck, a backhoe, specialty equipment, the larger trucks, those things would be handled by Ron, and an appropriate bid would go out for those. Those are much more complicated. So the thing that Mr. Kohlmeyer is looking for is those vehicles up to and including one-ton pickup trucks and the tires that are associated with it, the sales on that. The big thing that I say again is that we remove the concern for having our personnel, which is time, and time is money. We have right now one of our building trucks.
Building trucks been out of service since last Thursday. Ted's been out since Thursday, Friday, and today he bids because he needs tires, he needs brakes, he needs rotors. So far, he's gotten two bids returned. A tire was the cheapest, but he's waiting for one more. He's hoping the other guy was going to turn in the bid this afternoon or tomorrow morning. To do the work, so I have to take a day. The trucker has lost the truck already for 4 days. It will be 5 days till it gets done.
And the amount of time that it's taken Ted. And this happens regularly.
What's that turnaround if
Paul
Meyer prepares the guarantee?
Because
if he can't turn it around within a reasonable amount of time,
well,
he would still be better off going.
A lot more than 4 days.
Well, the last time, great
job,
usually one day, it's less than a day.
Chief?
I can tell you that I've seen since I've been here, I remember one time that they had to keep the car stuck.
In my case, generally one day, key issue
that's understandable. It's got to get shipped in or whatever. Just want to make sure, but if we have all of our vehicles going there versus, you know, some going here, some going there, now we have a higher demand on their workload too. So we want to make sure that that's going to keep the same level of service we've been getting with the turnaround.
The other thing too that I noticed going back quite a few months is most of those service works, that bid is already won by a
player. There won't be a huge increase in service.
So, from the finance standpoint, when you're looking at it, under an eight, from the time we sit from Tyco room and the rail come around getting the bins and the vehicle sitting out there versus it having been done there, at this discounted hourly rate, we will be coming out.
That's a 30% cost. And if you start knowing he's going to do the bids, like the squad cars, you know who they are, so you can make sure he's got them.
The other thing that I just want to interject too is I've been wanting to talk to the board for a while about the problem with the $250 limit and how do we increase it. With this in place, also the $250 limit doesn't have to be addressed. The maintenance is going there, so the $250 limit can still be applied every place else in the village in our standard order of business.
And we don't see the same level of problems with the $250 limit in other departments or with other items?
I do. I would like to still look at that $250 threshold, not only from a quoting standpoint, from a purchase order standpoint, but from a service level with my account and how productive or not productive she is. I would still like to present them for more discuss.
Okay.
But the mainly vehicles, because it's only not that vehicle waiting for service on that vehicle.
And the volume of
yes.
Times we have to do that. We do a lot of vehicle maintenance.
We have a lot of
vehicles.
I have a few questions.
Sure.
For $69, has there been a length on that? Is it something that we do every year?
Haven't talked to them about it.
And then I do have a question that I want to bring up. Do 80-90% of our tires come from a tire at this point? And this would be for Ron and Mike. You say 80%? You know?
No, because tires go with a state contract, and so they have established the price that a tire on occasion has a, but on other occasions they have not.
Those are usually truck tires too, aren't they?
Yeah, those are big.
Correct.
And how about the squad?
Good cars use Goodyear tires and they are exclusive.
But you, for the most part, use A tire for your tires?
I would say 98%.
Okay.
I would say 100%.
Okay, and I guess my question is, when you see oil changes coming through on here, they're $47.95, which is oil change filter and tire rotation. I was always under the understanding in the contract that we did a year and a half ago, and as long as I went there, that that was free. So how are oil changes coming in at $47.95 if it's just an oil change? Okay, I'd like to see that. And maybe one of you have seen one of the bills and can explain.
The use in the plastic oil, those cars have to have a higher grade of oil.
Okay.
It's
that makes sense. Okay. I just always wondered.
Yeah. We do our own oil changes.
I'm sorry, what, Ron?
And we do our own oil changes, simple maintenance on most of our vehicles and equipment.
Okay, from Public Works.
Yeah. One of my shade tree mechanics. And so what I'm trying to say is that sort of a mixed bag that's taking away that person from infrastructure work, but given that we don't charge our labor, it's cheaper for us to buy the material and give our free labor.
And then just one small concern that I have, and I understand, and it's great to see that this happened. However, have we given the other two mechanical shops that are in our town an opportunity to maybe want to lower their prices to get a little bit of our business so that we are sharing it?
That's come up in conversation, and again, this was not solicited. I didn't go to Mr. Holmeyer and say, hey, what can you do with the village a favor for? He came to me, and anybody else can also.
I don't want hard feelings from the other two that participate in things in our village, and now, you know, if they get wind of it, why won't we?
I understand.
The bidding process, I understand, from 2 years ago, that was 8 hours worth of work for anybody that sat down and done. I can understand that. But I just don't want to take from them and give it all to them when we have two other mechanical shops in our, actually, I think there's three.
There's actually four. Most of which don't even participate in the bid process now. They're not even interested in it.
When you come out for prices, whenever we're over $250, the ones that have gotten the award are $30, $2. We go with the lowest quantity. Sometimes it's seriously less than $3. That's if we've spent days.
Overall, I understand, but I just don't want to cheat the other mechanical shops that are in this area. We want to share it.
And honestly, I don't know how to approach that. Like I say, since I didn't solicit this, I understand your concern. And I'm going to ask the board for suggestions on how do we handle this.
Well, I guess my question would be if they're not winning the bid now, and they're not participating, are we really cheating them? Because they're not winning the bid now. They have the opportunity to win the bids straight up, and they're not winning them. So we're not really taking business away from them because they're not getting it now anyway on the bid process. So,
and I think Mickey's kind of alluding to the perception that we've now excluded them, and I completely understand.
Yeah. You know, have we gone to them for oil changes? Are they any cheaper? You know, now you corner the garage at this point. You know, have we, I know I've seen vehicles in there. Why have our vehicles been in there?
I don't,
I do
not recall the number. I think I honestly...
Didn't you tell me that there was a couple of air conditioning... things.
They know, the businesses know which ones that they will win, and they know if for some reason current garage always bids a lower price, and it's always the same price. Everyone always bids the same prices. They change the air condenser, air conditioning condenser on the squad cars. It's the part that goes out on every one of them. Disappointed because of the nature of how it's made and what it does. And Carter Garage is always a few dollars less than anywhere else. And Tire and Carter Garage are really the only ones that seriously compete, but a Tire always beats Carter Garage. Except for the air conditioning condensers, once in a while a wheel bearing, and always transmissions. Based transmission can be beat on their price, and every one of them tells us that they're at needs to have.
So if we enter into this, will we not be able to go to Dave's anymore for transmissions?
I think you are correct. I don't think he does it.
I've gone right and I've done stuff there and I had a transmission problem with my old car a couple of years ago that might have been more than
I didn't think you did that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's...
So that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, okay.
Sounds great.
So I think the other price is obviously lower. Is it going to now be lower than what Corning Garage was?
He would have done that a year ago. He would have said it.
He's already getting people with 99. He's going to smoke them at 69. So, I mean, there's no even sense.
But the chances are he's going to be
storing in the garage anyway. But I guess the point that Vicki's making, and I agree with, they would always have the ability to come to us and offer us a deal. Even if it is a smaller deal on just X or Y, not X, Y, and Z, would we entertain looking at them?
They may want to just cover the oil change. Although he gets tired, there's a history of rotation, you know, so it's hard to say, but I just, I hate to see, and they could get wind of this, and then they're going to feel left out. Well, I participate, I do this, I come back later. First of all, and I'm not even recognized, I'm not even complaining.
I understand
the
concern.
You know, maybe give us some ideas, and how could you?
Right. They just was recently presented to us. Would you be interested in some point if it did work out? And Mike, if he's willing to make it, you know, for a small chunk of it to go out to them and still work with it even.
Well, if we're lowering your hourly rate by $30, I don't know if he would agree with that. That was the whole point of his proposal. Again, I understand what we're saying. I want to support local businesses also. But I'm looking at this as strictly a really good business move. I think we're going to save a lot of resources with sending people out. We're going to get vehicles back on the road faster. And I think at the end of the year, we're going to save a lot of money.
So I'd be interested in seeing what the agreement would look like, the terms, how long, and what would be our, if you can't get it done within this many days, we have the right to get it here. I would like to see those terms all laid out there.
I'll come up with a simple one-page term, and we'll give it to Mr. Zimmerman here and let him turn it into a novel.
Yes.
No, no, I'd like to see
the
part
of it.
So am I getting a feeling I should move forward on this, Mr. Kohlmeyer, start getting things on paper?
Yes.
Very good. Very good. Suggested new traffic, so I don't see anything. Anybody have?
Just one real quick one. The technology projects you spoke of, mentioned there's many of them, and I remember there was a little somewhere, is redesigning the website one of those?
Yes. We had some residents actually reach out, John Newman King one, who would like to offer some of his 20 plus years of experience in web design. I actually haven't sent out a request for proposal. One of the things that we have to address, Greg, is there's something with Vario, and we're uncovering this now. Vario is the email server that we're having some problem with. There's something with Vario that is connected to our web page. So right now, our consultant, Mr. Jatu, and Current Tech are looking at that, because once we install the Exchange server, we have to make sure that we don't interrupt that service. Once that's solid, then we'll start looking at rebuilding that web page.
Okay.
So yes, it is being looked at.
Okay.
Instead of looking at special events, we have a calendar. We pretty much know what happens. But I think and we've kind of gone through some of this when we went through the special event for Hometown Fest. I think we should be developing a timeline chart for the board so that we know when events are coming up, the things that need to be done, we're hitting them, we're ahead of them, or we're working them instead of just getting to the event and then scrambling and rushing through. I think that the Hometown Fest caught us a lot. So we might want to do a timeline
of our special events in totality.
Great.
So the board can be aware of
what's going on and where we are with different things at any given time, too.
We know we're not leaving things out of forgetting. Good point. Any other topics? May I get a motion to adjourn?
Vote.
I believe that went to Trustee Trippon and seconded by Trustee Brzezinski. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and adjourned at 9:35. This is about an hour and 45 minutes of chickens. So is that on tape? Sorry.